This is Brian Forrester, and welcome to the Active Investor Podcast, part of Lord Abbett's Investment Conversation Series. In this podcast, we look at what we view are some of the most relevant near-term and longer-term drivers in the markets. So, thinking about investor behavior, risk factors, how changing market dynamics can influence security prices and investment strategies, and through a secular lens, where some of the big megatrends are building. And in today's episode, we're talking earnings. So we will again be looking at both the very near term, so getting under the hood of the most recent earnings data, and then also thinking longer term about where corporate earnings may be headed as the calendar flips to 2023. And for this episode, we welcome back our equity strategist, and I'd say our earnings guru, Melanie Coffin, who is our resident expert on dissecting earnings and helping investors make sense of what's driving the equity markets. And a quick reminder about who Melanie is. She's a CFA charter holder. She's been with us here at Lord Abbett since 2018 and previously worked in the financial technology industry. So she really knows her stuff on things like earnings analytics, equity markets, and what the data is telling us. She also talks extensively with clients, our portfolio managers, economists, and writes on a variety of investment topics. So, Melanie, thanks for being here.
Awesome. Thank you so much for having me, Brian.
Sure. So, again, we're going to focus on earnings and what we just saw from the third quarter. Not so much from a breaking news standpoint. I think most of the ink has dried from all the immediate reactions to the data. But really, in a broader perspective, some of the important trends and themes we are seeing emerge, as well as what we're expecting in the year ahead. So, also not in the breaking news category, we've been through one of the most turbulent rate cycles in decades, really going back to the early 80s. And it's been a gut punch to the equity markets. And that drawdown has been all about anticipation. I'd say anticipation of how bad the impact will be to earnings. And now here we are, likely at the beginning of an earnings recession, probably an economic recession. So one thing that many investors are thinking about now is, in terms of anticipation, will the equity market now start anticipating the recovery 6, 12, 18 months out, or whatever it is, since so much of the damage to equity values was anticipation? So, Melanie, let's start at a high-level overview of this past earnings season. What are some of the main takeaways?
Thanks, Brian. And so at a high level, 70% of S&P 500 companies came in above earnings estimates. And so while at face value, that does seem like potentially a higher number, you know, it is below the five-year average of 77%. And taking a look at margins, they're still above the long-term average, but coming down modestly both quarter over quarter and then year over year. And so beyond just the data, from more of a thematic perspective, the market does still seem to care a lot about profitability, which has been a theme for the last few quarters, and then also seeing some stabilization of the issues that companies have been dealing with for the last year or two. And so if we think about also beyond just the numbers for earnings, thinking about stock price performance, companies this quarter were being punished for missing and rewarded for beating expectations. And this marked a reversion from what we saw over the prior quarter, where it was much of a less punitive environment. And so those companies that missed expectations weren't necessarily seeing their stock price come down. So more of an asymmetrical skew to the downside with this quarter.
Great. So that's a good overview. So what were we seeing then from a sector and trend standpoint? What really stood out to you during the quarter?
Yeah, I mean, I think for this quarter, there were certainly some bright spots this earnings season. Two areas that are worth highlighting are energy and healthcare. So within energy, again, one of the strongest sectors, which is a trend we've seen for some time, reported the highest earnings growth of all 11 sectors, coming in at nearly 140%. So just continuing to see that really robust year-over-year growth. You know, when we think about the energy sector, we can think about oil and then also gas. Starting on the oil side, we're seeing an acceleration in earnings for services companies. Now, if we think back the last few quarters or so, E&Ps were really doing better earlier on. We saw utilization drop for equipment rentals, and so service companies were barely break even from a cash perspective. And then during that downturn, capacity was rationalized. And so if we think about what we're seeing today, we have a good backdrop where there's less capacity and higher demand. And so that's creating a tailwind for a lot of these services companies. And then on the gas side, if we think about the European gas market, it's I think we can all agree it's structurally changed now because of what happened with the war. Russia supplied around 40% of European gas, and that has been cut dramatically, around 80% or so. And so when we think about the picture for gas, we do think there continues to be a good demand story beyond just this quarter and this year. And I think that's not only just because of these structural shifts in Europe, but also because when we think about natural gas, it is a better energy transition fuel. And then talking a little bit more about the healthcare space, two areas that you know I think are worth highlighting are on the med tech side and then on the biotech side. Now, on the med tech side, we're still seeing a lot of companies talking about staffing issues. But I would say what was different this quarter versus last quarter is we're seeing this start to stabilize. And then at the same time, there continues to be a backlog of procedures and of patients. And so looking at, you know, a breakdown of month by month, kind of what happened within the med tech space, August was weaker. That was expected. That's more of a seasonal trend. People tend to go on vacation. But then September and October came back incredibly strong. And then I think another dynamic that we're seeing unfold is that because of COVID, you did see people taking a pause on going to the doctor. So they weren't getting those diagnostics done that they usually do. And what we're seeing more recently is a reversal of that trend. So hospital utilizations are back up significantly. So when we're thinking about the companies that we tend to have a preference for within the med tech space, it's those companies that have more of those disruptive new product launches that tends to insulate them a little bit more from a lot of these macro issues that we're continuing to still see kind of plague this space. And then on the biotech side, and then I'll pause after this. I know I'm throwing a lot at you, Brian. Biotech, large cap biotech specifically, had a solid earnings season. And then small and micro cap biotech is tied a little bit more to the macro in the sense that it's tied to investor risk appetite. And I would say just more broadly within biotech, if we think about what we saw within this space in 2021 into really the spring of this year, the FDA was really focused on, you know, COVID vaccines, COVID boosters. People were less inclined to enroll in trials because a lot of folks were, you know, staying at home, work from home. What we're seeing now is more of a pickup in this space. The FDA has more capacity. There's a resumption of enrollment in clinical trials. We're seeing M&A activity pick up. And so beyond just the earnings and the fundamentals within this space, I think there's also just kind of a lot of cross currents that are setting up a pretty powerful backdrop for healthcare and also specifically for biotech, where we're shifting from more of this hostile environment in the beginning of 2021 into 2022 to more of a neutral and then hopefully at some point more of a bull market. I don't think we're quite there yet, but more in that neutral phase where we are seeing select winners.
So at least when a drug company comes out with great data, the stock rallies for more than 5 minutes.
Yes.
So, I mean, biotech has certainly gotten pummeled over the past, 18 months, ever since the fear of rates going up began, this idea of equity duration. Biotech was certainly probably had the harshest response to what has happened over the past 18 months in terms of inflation and rate hikes. Okay, so we covered oil, gas, medtech, and biotech. As areas that you know had somewhat of a favorable response. Now the shift to the consumer, it's more of a kind of a mixed bag during the quarter. What did we see from there?
You know, that's a great term. It was a mixed bag. If you think about the consumer, they're increasingly constrained, especially on the low to middle end, where stimulus is diminishing. We're seeing the savings rate is now really well below what it was pre-COVID. Seeing a pickup in credit card utilization. Now, I would say it's also worth noting, though, that if you look at median household savings and checkings balances, they do still remain well above those pre-pandemic levels.
Right.
So it's a bit of a push and pull here with companies that are related to or tied to the consumer. And so how did that play out from an earnings perspective? You know, I think one of the core elements of this earnings season was this idea with trade down, where consumers were seeking out lower priced options for goods and services.
Mm-hmm.
And so if we think about through the think about that dynamic through the lens of a company, companies with products that do not have items or goods that have to be financed. So think about RVs or boats. And then also companies that have more of these lower kind of ticket items where it's easier to pass pricing is more of a sweet spot right now. And then also with that trade down dynamic, you can literally see that in the earnings calls. And so if you look at earnings calls over this last quarter, you'll see a dramatic spike beyond just this last quarter, really over the last year, where management mentioned this term trade down. And we're now actually above that 08-09 level. And then also kind of with that same theme of what was commonly mentioned this quarter is this idea of weak demand. So a lot of companies mentioned weak demand, but I think an interesting kind of phenomenon that played out in the consumer space is that you'll see a modest spike in management mentioning weak demand in the staple side. And then if you look at consumer discretionary, you'll see a dramatic spike in the mention of weak demand. And so I think that plays into the trade down theme here, where staples tend to be more of those lower priced items that we need day in and day out versus consumer discretionary can be more of those one-off, you know, purchases that can be put off kind of down the road.
Okay. So yeah, so some pretty rational behavior there. If we are seeing the consumer starting to get squeezed, makes a lot of sense that they would make those rational decisions to sort of, as you say, trade down. What were some areas of strength that we saw from the consumer?
Yeah, I think if we think about that trade down dynamic, one area where we saw that play out was on the restaurant side, really across the market cap spectrum. And specifically, it was restaurants that, again, tended to have those lower ticket price points.
Yep.
So people still want to go out to eat, but they want to maybe go to a slightly lower price point restaurant. And then, you know, another interesting kind of theme that came out this earnings season was strength from home improvement, where we were seeing margin expansion in some of these home-oriented businesses. And you wouldn't necessarily expect that if you think about everything that the Fed has done with rising rates, that, you know, anything tied to housing might potentially be coming under pressure.
Right.
Now, if we think about homeowners, they're actually one of the least impacted kind of cohorts from this inflation and rising rate kind of backdrop, where the value of their home is actually increasing. And then homeowners, generally speaking, have a fixed cost with their mortgage. And most folks took advantage of the low rate environment, you know, a few years back and refinanced. So that's been a really powerful tailwind for home improvement businesses where, you know, if we take a look underneath the hood there, traffic is down in those stores, but the amount that those people are spending is up. So fewer people are spending, but they're going in and they're spending more on home improvement.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So they're willing to still keep going out to restaurants, maybe just at a lower price point.
Yep.
They're willing to spend on their house, but they are overall still making some of those trade down decisions as well. So interesting. So I got one last area I think we might want to cover, and one that gets talked about probably the most, are the mega caps. I think we've sort of retired the FANG term, but they had kind of a tough quarter again. What were your thoughts on their stock performance and also maybe something on the companies themselves?
Yeah. You know, when we think about the mega caps, I would say beyond just this quarter, going back over the last 18 or so months, that's been an area of the market that's been relatively more resilient. And what we started to see last quarter and what we've really seen this quarter is a shift there where the mega caps are starting to roll over.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say we can't say this is because of one specific thing that's happening in the market. We're seeing this weakness and it really varies name by name. You could think about what we're seeing in the ad space with a slowdown in demand for ads. We're seeing cost pressure on the employment and supply chain logistics side for some companies. We also are seeing kind of new entrants from a competitive perspective on the social media side. And so it's really just a confluence of factors that's impacting a lot of these companies. And we started to see that fundamental breakdown, that weakness last quarter, but we didn't see the stocks react to that weakness. And what we saw this quarter was that departure where if you missed, you were then, you did have that kind of punitive response where the stock price fell along with the earnings miss. And so I think that's an interesting kind of dynamic where the market's starting to realize that wasn't a one-off, but something that's more embedded and core to these businesses and that this pain might be around for longer.
Yeah. I mean, and that kind of speaks to the idea of momentum that we talked about on the prior podcast with Vernon Bice. They're obviously focused on momentum in the other direction, trying to find stocks where there's an underreaction to good news. And then that underreaction starts to get corrected as the good news continues. You're seeing somewhat of the opposite here where, you know, a lot of, as you say, the quarter prior was not great, but the stocks didn't get hurt. Now you're seeing maybe that there's a realization that these companies really are starting to slow down longer term. And so that punishment is now starting to accelerate a little bit in terms of negative price momentum. By the way, on that last podcast, we promised a white paper on momentum. It's now on our website. If you go to the insights section of lordabbott.com, so I'll just give a little plug there for that. It certainly seems like the mega caps now maybe have peaked. I don't know if there's, we might need a couple more quarters of data to see if that trend is continuing, but they've certainly had a massive run over the past 14 years for good reason, but you are starting to see some signs of weakness now.
And one other thing I would add is just beyond the mega caps, if we broaden out and we think about, you know, just generally the tech side, consumer, an area that we're seeing continue to be rewarded are companies that are shifting to profitability. And one place that we have seen this over the last few quarters is with e-commerce. And so that was an area of the market that went through a rationalization phase. And so these stocks are now in a better area in terms of expectations embedded in the stock price. And so if you marry that with the fact that management is kind of pivoting towards and prioritizing profitability, we're starting to now see these companies and specifically the stocks being rewarded.
Yeah. So it seems almost like a signal from companies, you know, hey, we're able to do this. You know, we've cleaned up our balance sheet. We focused a lot on costs. We're able to weather the higher input costs. And so we're going to demonstrate, you know, that we can be resilient through this environment. And they are clearly focusing more on profitability than, say, you know, just outright top line growth in this environment.
Yeah, no, I think that's a fair generalization. And so beyond sectors, Brian, I'd be curious to hear your thoughts just more broadly about the market outlook, whether that's, you know, market cap, XUS. How are you guys thinking about things?
Yeah, so I think two areas that we've been, you know, discussing that look particularly attractive from valuation standpoint, as well as long-term growth, would be U.S. small caps, particularly on the growth side, and then also international equities. Maybe I'll start with international first. You know, two things that we're looking at. Number one, valuations. Now, valuations in international equities have been low for a long time, and partly for good reason. You know, Europe's very low growth, the deceleration in China, you know, Japan's slow growth. There's not really been a whole lot to get excited about, especially on a relative basis to U.S. equities. What's interesting, though, is that because of this drawdown over the past year, that international equities, if you go, say, by the ACWI XUS, are approaching the 08 lows. So from a just against its own history now, it has gotten perhaps so bad that it's good. But that alone is not enough. I would say the other thing that's really interesting is that we could be seeing now a peaking dollar. And if you go back to early 21, up until very recently, the dollar has rallied about 28%, you know, relative to a basket of currencies around the world, which is a pretty dramatic headwind for international stocks. That now is starting to look like it's unwinding. And, you know, we've certainly seen a big unwind just in the past few weeks as this dynamic between what the Fed has already done and what other central banks are now likely to have to do. So inflation is really ripping in Europe and the UK, and the ECB has been far behind the Fed, and now they're going to start ratcheting up just at the same time when the Fed is sort of now easing off or signaling that they're going to ease off in terms of their aggressive rate hikes. So that dynamic could be really interesting for international stocks alone, not to mention that you might start to see some actual growth. And then the other area in small caps, Look, this to us looks like a screaming anomaly, and I'm not going to say today is the day, but you know, you kind of look at some of the data out there about just valuations of small caps, which are trading at a steep discount to large caps. We talked about the mega caps earlier, and that they're showing some pretty significant weakness from a growth and stock price standpoint. But U.S. small caps right now make up only 4% of the stock market. And you think about, compare that to pre-global financial crisis when they made up 10%. So the mega caps have certainly overwhelmed the overall equity market picture for a long time. But you also kind of look at how do equities perform when you're in an environment like this where you have inflation running above 3% but coming down? And all equities tend to do well in that environment. This is shaping up to be an interesting time for equities. But during those types of periods, small caps tend to outperform by about 9% annually over large caps over the past 50 years. So there is a very strong case just from an environment standpoint. Then you look at some of the areas of innovation that we always talk about on the growth side that have been just pummeled. You talked about biotechs earlier. There does appear to be sort of a very strong story building in U.S. small caps.
And I think the one thing that I would add is if you take a look at the 2021 class of IPOs, these stocks really never had a chance to get going. And so what we've seen more recently is finally some of these companies, some of these stocks are getting rewarded. So I think that'll be an interesting thing to kind of see how that evolves over the next year or so.
Yeah. And then just kind of wrapping up with what we're seeing in 2023, you know, I think most at Lord Abbett still think there's probably more downside revisions coming to 23 earnings. They've been coming down. But again, how much of that is already baked into equity prices? We talked about that word anticipation earlier, that the stock market is kind of always discounting 12 months from now, just as it did as it was discounting the coming inflation. There's also the idea, and these are the worst words to say in finance, this time it's different, but there is a big key difference between, you know, heading into what is likely a shallow recession now into prior recessions, and that is this very tight labor market that we don't see changing a whole lot, partly because the participation rate has gone down. It's hard to find labor. And the consumer then is still going to be very well positioned, even if we do go into an earnings recession combined with an economic recession, at least as defined just by two consecutive quarters of negative growth. But what really makes a recession bad is when people are losing their jobs and losing their incomes. And that's when you start to see the default spiral. And we don't see that as a likely outcome, given the very tight labor market and the need for labor right now that companies have. And so with that, I think we can wrap things up. And I'll just say thank you for coming back again, Melanie. Great stuff as always.
Thank you for having me.
Sure. I look forward to having you back again next quarter. I think we covered some key points here around corporate earnings and what may lie ahead for the markets in 2023. Again, for listeners wanting to learn more about Lord Abbett's views on the markets, as well as the white paper on momentum that I mentioned earlier, please visit the insights section of lordabbott.com. And so we'll leave it there. This has been the Active Investor Podcast, and thank you for listening.
Special thanks to Lord Abbett Senior Editorial Strategist Will Andrews for assistance with this episode. If you have any topics or questions that you would like covered on the Investment Conversation, please reach out to us at podcasts@lordabbott.com. Subscribe and rate us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or your favorite streaming app of choice. The U.S. Federal Reserve is the central bank of the United States. The federal funds, or Fed funds rate, is the target interest rate set by the Fed at which commercial banks borrow and lend their excess reserves to each other overnight. ECB refers to the European Central Bank. FANG is a popular acronym grouping large-cap tech leaders Facebook, a unit of Meta Inc., Apple, Amazon, Netflix, and Google, a unit of Alpha Inc. The MSCI ACWI refers to the MSCI All Country World Index, which is designed to represent performance of large and mid-cap stocks across 23 developed and 24 emerging markets. As of May 2022, it covers more than 2,933 constituents across 11 sectors and approximately 85% of the free float adjusted market capitalization in each market. The MSCI ACWI XUS excludes the United States from the index. Indexes are unmanaged and do not reflect the deduction of fees and expenses and are not available for direct investment. Growth or value investing. Growth stocks may be characterized as equities of companies that have demonstrated better than average gains in earnings in recent years and are expected to continue delivering high levels of profit growth. Growth equities typically carry higher price-to-earning multiples than the broader market, high earning growth records, and greater volatility than the broader market. Secular growth stocks are stocks of companies whose economic performance is relatively immune to economic cycles. Value stocks may be characterized as equities of companies that have fallen out of favor with investors but still have good fundamentals, or new companies that have yet to be recognized by investors. Value stocks typically feature lower price-to-earning multiples than the broader market and often industry peers, and somewhat lower volatility than the overall equity market. References to corporate earnings growth based on FactSet data. Mentions of specific companies are for reference purposes only and are not meant to describe the investment merits of, or potential, or actual portfolio changes related to, securities of those companies. Unless otherwise noted, all discussions are based on U.S. markets and U.S. monetary and fiscal policies. The credit quality of the securities in a portfolio is assigned by a nationally recognized statistical rating organization, or NSRO, such as Standard & Poor's, Moody's, or Fitch, as an indication of an issuer's creditworthiness. Ratings range from AAA, which is the highest, to D, which is the lowest. Bonds rated BBB or above are considered investment grade. Credit ratings BB and below are lower rated securities, or junk bonds. High yielding, non-investment grade bonds, or junk bonds, involve higher risks than investment grade bonds. Adverse conditions may affect the issuer's ability to pay interest and principal on these securities. Investing involves risk, including the loss of principal. The value of investments in fixed income securities will change as interest rates fluctuate and in response to market movements. Generally, when interest rates rise, the price of debt securities fall, and when interest rates fall, prices generally rise. The municipal market can be affected by adverse tax, legislative, or political changes, and by the financial condition of the issuers of municipal securities. Investments in non-U.S. or emerging market securities, which may be adversely affected by economic, political, or regulatory factors and subject to currency volatility and greater liquidity risk. The value of investments in equity securities will fluctuate in response to general economic conditions and changes in prospects of particular companies and/or sectors in the economy. No investing strategy can overcome all market volatility or guarantee future results. Market forecasts and projections are based on current market conditions and subject to change without notice. Projections should not be considered a guarantee. The views and opinions expressed by the Lord Abbott speaker are those of the speaker as of the date of the broadcast and do not necessarily represent the views of the firm as a whole. Any such views are subject to change at any time based upon market conditions or other conditions, and Lord Abbott disclaims any responsibility to update such views. This material is not intended to be relied upon as a forecast, research, or investment advice. It is not a recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any securities or to adopt any investment strategy. Neither Lord Abbott nor the Lord Abbott speaker can be responsible for any direct or incidental loss incurred by applying any of the information offered. The information provided is not directed at any investor or category of investors and is provided solely as general information about Lord Abbott's products and services and to otherwise provide general investment education. None of the information provided should be regarded as a suggestion to engage in or refrain from any investment-related course of action, as neither Lord Abbott nor its affiliates are undertaking to provide impartial investment advice, act as an impartial advisor, or give advice in a fiduciary capacity. If you are an individual retirement investor, contact your financial advisor or other fiduciary about whether any given instrument, idea, strategy, product, or service may be appropriate for your circumstances. This broadcast is copyright 2022 of Lord Abbott & Co., LLC. All rights reserved. This recording may not be reproduced in whole or in part or in any form without the permission of Lord Abbott. Lord Abbott Mutual Funds are distributed by Lord Abbott Distributor, LLC.